G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Surrounded by heavy breathers and sad sacks. That's what I'm surrounded by today, and I want to find out why the hell it is the case. It's up and about on a Thursday morning. Adam White, you're the heavy breather. Good morning.
I'm good.
You gave me heavy breathing in the early doors.
I'm a little bit tired. That's all to do with my wife, but
Oh boy.
But I'm fine.
Oh boy. Activities. Wow, we.
Yes. Wonderful thing.
Introduction to the Thursday morning. Fatigue from activities.
No, you said
hectic household.
You said activity.
I didn't say what activities. You're taking it where you went. Yeah. Disgraceful man.
Wouldn't have thought so.
Why are you tired? How come it's Em's fault?
Well, last night was a very exciting night for me. It was a television event because my favourite television show is Love It or List It on Foxtel.
Which says a fair bit about
and
maybe you need some activities.
A former colleague of mine.
Maybe you need some more activity.
A former colleague of mine was Josh Fraser. And his house was being renovated.
Josh Fraser, former number one draft pick.
Yeah. And it was good. I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It had a little extra element to it last night.
So how was it?
If people out there haven't seen Love It or List It, give it a go because it is quality television.
No, it's not. That can't be.
No, don't say that because you refuse to watch
correct.
It.
Correct.
And you're missing out.
No, I'm not. I'm okay.
So what happened was that we were supposed to watch it at 8:30.
I get to talk to Josh just up the road.
Emma forgot to tape it. So we had to watch it at 10:30, which meant it went from 10:30 until 11:30.
Why wouldn't you just tape it? Because you clearly taped it. Why didn't you watch it today?
No, but I wanted to watch it last night. I wanted to watch it last night. I wanted to watch it live.
It said you. Well, it wasn't live. It was 2 hours delayed.
Yeah, it was still on the same night.
I think you're taking not enough of the blame here for your
fatigue. Did you watch it? I asked you to watch it.
And I told you categorically that I would not watch it. Adam Ramonaskis is a former Bombers champion, and he's the sad sack today. And I've had a gutful of it already. Good morning, Rama.
Good morning. I actually quite like Love It or List It. It's a very
fantastic.
Good show.
It's a fantastic.
And I will be watching that episode with Josh Fraser. I recorded it.
So you would watch it at a reasonable
normal
hour.
Normal time.
Yeah, a reasonable hour. Yeah,
it's a good show.
It seems to make sense.
It's a good show, isn't it, Rama?
It's an excellent show.
Yeah, it's
excellent.
It's not going to happen in my world.
See, that really surprised me.
You had to open your mind up a little bit more.
What for? What did you do?
It's in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, renovating the area, the swimming pool, the
basketball. Is not my wheelhouse.
The basketball court.
No, that's through necessity.
Bar area.
That's through necessity. That's not through want and desire. That's just through necessity of growing families.
You talk about me needing to go to an Asian country to open my mind.
Hang on a second.
Should watch that show.
You're comparing my lack of a commitment to a reality television show.
It's not
reality. Well, it is. Is it real?
It's absolutely not real. Yes, it is real.
So it's reality.
I don't know how to answer that.
You're comparing my willingness, lack thereof, to watch a television show to your absolute refusal to get outside of Australia, unless, of course, it's the USA or England.
That's incorrect.
Where else have you been?
Well, 2 years ago, you might know I went on a holiday.
USA or England.
We went to Belgium. We went to France. We went to the Netherlands.
What'd you eat?
What's that?
What'd you eat?
That's irrelevant. I can't remember what I ate.
Yes, you can. Did you have
snails in France?
No, he's insinuating that he couldn't believe that I ate McDonald's on the Champs-Élysées.
No, I'm absolutely disgusted is what I am.
Frog legs?
I'm not eating that sort of stuff.
Why?
You wouldn't either.
I have.
Frog legs.
100%.
Wow. Champs-Élysées, Macca's.
I told you, thick shakes taste different to what
they taste in Australia. But that doesn't surprise me with him.
It's disgusting.
It does not surprise me.
You're the Champs-Élysées, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. One of the most iconic venues in the planet.
A beautiful croissant, did you?
We had that for breakfast.
Right. Before the chunky thick shake. Now, why are you sad, Zach? Grumpy Guts?
I came in here, you were drooping all over the desk. I'm a little bit fatigued.
Are you mentally or physically?
Mentally. Yeah, mentally.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course you can.
You manage Ben Brown. When you saw Ben Brown in an Essendon jumper, what were your thoughts on that?
It's all part of the show, really, of the last couple of weeks and what happens, and it's just it was simply ridiculous, that, to be honest with you. Seeing Ben Brown in an Essendon, it was simply ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
Why would he be in an Essendon jumper?
It's a digital image.
I understand that.
part of the fanfare.
Because the suggestion was that if Essendon got 5 and 9 from Sydney, they'd give it to North Melbourne for Ben Brown. It was just a hypothetical.
Yeah.
There's no point in getting emotional about it.
If you would understand how many hypotheticals I've gone through over the last 2 weeks, 4 weeks, you'd understand why it was ridiculous.
It is surprising that Danaher's management, the powerful TLA, could not broker a deal involving one of their players, even if it involved a third club that would have helped their client to Sydney. That's a good cook from you, to you, from Jake Noll this morning in the H. Yep. It is surprising that a powerful management company, TLA, couldn't do the deal. Is that why you sat sack today?
Look, it was extremely difficult, that deal. I think if you listen to Joe's manager, Nigel Carmody.
He got one vote last night, too.
Who did?
Nigel.
What do you mean he got a vote?
Third best dressed manager of the night. Didn't quite get into the top two.
Who's the top two?
Oh, Tom Petrillo, number one, clearly. He really put on a show. And I would say Colin Young, number two.
Colin Young with the vest.
Open neck shirt and the vest. The waistcoat.
Where'd you see these
and
people
Nigel
talking?
Nigel Carmody would be third. That were the top three. Nigel would be disappointed with only getting one vote, too.
Yeah. Where'd you get access to vision of those people?
I just had a look at it while I was waiting for Love It and List It. Or List It.
Now, it was disappointing for Joe. It was very disappointing for Joe last night that he wasn't able to get to Sydney. But he goes back to Essendon for 12 months and potentially looks at that option again next year.
Take your manager's powerful management firm, TLA, as Jake Noll reports this morning, you take that hat off and you put your Bombers hat on. Are you happy? Or can you separate that or not?
No, I don't separate that at all, because our job was to get our client to Sydney and we weren't able to do that.
But as an Essendon man, are you okay with the outcome?
Not really.
Right. You have an affinity with the Bombers, Adam?
Oh, it's a great result for Essendon.
Bloody hell, there's Adams everywhere.
It's a great result for Essendon. And I actually applaud Adrian Dodoro, and I know that he's a polarising figure in AFL football, but he stuck to his principles. He was very consistent and clear from the start as to what it was going to take to be able to secure a contracted marquee player of their football club, and Sydney couldn't come to the party. Now, in my view, Sydney didn't try particularly hard, because they don't have to, in their view, because in 12 months' time, they'll have a similar offer on the table for him as a restricted free agent. And while it will still potentially be a difficult process to get him, it won't certainly be as difficult as what it was for them over the last couple of weeks. So I kind of think that they sat back and said, look, we'll offer you this, this and this, and, you know, we can get the deal done, or we can wait 12 months and you might get a, you know, first round draft compensation and that might be it. Now, Essendon can counter that and say, well, he's only a restricted free agent, so we can match the deal and we'll get into a haggle again. But I think overall, that was that, you know, Essendon's got 12 months to prove to Joe that he can stay at the football club long term in a club that can potentially be successful, and work hard on changing his life from an environmental point of view to hopefully see him stay long term.
But while it's never going to happen, because they wanted the player and the Sydney Swans are never going to deal the player, we learned last night.
Yep. But we knew that from the start. So I think
I don't think with Joe it's necessarily about the club.
No, that's what I mean. It's changing his life outside the football club.
That's right.
Yeah. Now
I think they've got a big challenge there on their hands.
Yeah, I think they do. Of course they do. But they know that.
It was interesting, the conversation. Agent Dodoro, who was speaking once the period had finished, finally, on the Danaher deal, and how he would have been feeling at that time. We might have that grab from Adrian about Joe. I think I might have heard that in the breakfast bite. So let's have a listen to Adrian Dodoro talking about how Joe may have been feeling post-trade period yesterday.
5 wasn't on the table. Look, in these things, as you know, there's a lot of discussions, to-ing and fro-ing. They've got their reasons for what they did. We had really respectful discussions throughout the whole week. In the end, our philosophy was we wanted a player to be part of this, and they couldn't see their way around it, and we respect that, and they respect what our wishes were, and we've shaken hands and we move on. Spoke to Joe about an hour ago, and obviously a little bit disappointed, but as you know, with Joey, he's a resilient young man, and actually, through this whole process, I think we've grown to actually respect him a hell of a lot more for the person that he is. He's going to be a little bit disappointed right as we speak right now, but knowing him and his character, he'll come out of this a better, stronger person. We absolutely love him, and we think he'll have a great year next year.
Adrian Dodoro there from the Bombers, talking about Joe Danaher's situation. The role of the manager now, Rama, because as we heard there a couple of times, he was disappointed when Adrian spoke to him about the situation and how it ended up. What are the conversations you need to have? Not you, because you're not specifically his manager, but your management firm would need to have with Joe now to get him back into the game, so to speak.
Well, I know Nigel already spoke to Joe basically 5 minutes after the trade period finished last night. Joe was clearly disappointed with it didn't happen. I think you just let the dust settle. He's away at the moment. He's overseas, so he's going to try and enjoy the rest of his holiday. You let the next couple of days play out with him, and you know, you have some further conversations with both clubs to find out a little bit more information, if you can, of maybe the whys. But then you've got to get on with it. Joe knows he needs to get on with it now, and priority number one is to continue to rehabilitate his groins, so he gives himself a chance to play some sort of good football.
Now, I think the thing with the Joe Danaher situation, we're getting a heap of text messages coming through from Essendon supporters and from football supporters that clearly aren't Essendon supporters, that Joe needs to play good football himself.
He knows that.
So for him to play good football and to actually get onto the field is actually going to help Essendon, but it's actually going to help him, because if he has another year where he doesn't get on the field or doesn't play particularly good football, Sydney aren't necessarily going to offer him the same sort of contract that has been clearly offered to him in this period.
And I think that's the hope from everybody, that he does get back on the field.
Absolutely.
And he does enjoy playing football.
I've said this before, Rama, and I know we've said it a lot of times through Daniel's favourite time of the year, but the whole reason why Essendon was stubborn to a point, as one of the text messages says, with Danaher is all about their list strategy and where they're at. Mm. Now, the fact that they were prepared to trade out two first-round draft picks to get Dylan Scheel in, their strategy was not to have a situation that they would have even 5-9 this year, because it wasn't going to help them with the list that they have for the now. Now, if push came to shove, they may have taken 5-9. That was never officially offered. But ultimately, they had been looking around for what 5-9 could get them. Now, we sort of joked about the Ben Brown scenario, but whether that be Ollie Wines, whether it be Isaac Heaney, whether it be Luke Parker, whoever it was, they did look around for what would potentially be an equivalent player to Joe Danaher, not picks. And Essendon spent weeks trying, couldn't get anywhere, so that's just where it ended in the end. Is that a fair assessment?
Your key forward is always the centrepiece of your list strategy.
Mm.
And that's, I know that's basically every single club. Yep, you've got to have a strong and powerful midfield, but you need somebody to kick goals. You look at Richmond, how good they are. They then go and get Tom Lynch this year and they become a better team. He becomes that centerpiece of their whole strategy. They change their forward line this year to fit in Tom Lynch. So they're very, very hard to replace. And I understand Essendon and their stance. And I also understand Sydney and their stance. But, you know, the deal didn't get done. And that's the disappointing part, because in the background, I know the issues that Joe's having, and they're real. And that's why I said, you know, Essendon, they're gonna have to work very, very hard with Joe in this this first period of pre-season to get him really happy and confident again.
So what is Joe worth? Well, Joe clearly isn't worth much if you look through his last two seasons. He's played 11 games, and in that time he has kicked 15 goals. He had one good game, or two good games in that period. One was on Anzac Day and one was first up against North Melbourne. That's not a lot to sort of write home about. But it's more about what he had done the two previous years, where he had played 45 games in that two-year period. He kicked 65 goals, 39 in his All-Australian year. So that is over 100 shots at goal, and was a genuine match winner for the football club. And the year before, he kicked 43 goals with an average of 2 goals a game. There aren't too many players around of his size
Josh
and
Jenkins.
His versatility that averages that amount of goals per game, except for
Josh Jenkins.
Someone like Josh Jenkins, which is the beautiful bridge that I was heading. And this is the interesting part about this whole discussion about key forwards, Rama, because we had a situation through the trade period where Josh Jenkins leaves Adelaide for pretty much steak knives, and Adelaide takes some of his contract, and he's kicked 261 goals in his last 119 games at an average of 2.2 goals a game, with a season best in that period of 62. And Josh Bruce walks out of St Kilda having kicked 164 goals from 89 games at an average of 1.84 goals a game. And my point on that is that neither Adelaide or St Kilda have got a ready-made replacement for those players that have walked out the door. Now, St Kilda will put a lot of emphasis on Max King as that player. Yep. Puts a lot more pressure now on Taylor Walker at Adelaide to really stand up now. And they've also got Fogarty that it's different but similar. But it's a really interesting situation that those two players were essentially walked to other clubs with an average of 2 goals a game through their last, you know, four years.
I don't think Josh Bruce was walked to another club. I think St Kilda...
They had to get one out to get one in.
Yeah, they had to get one out and they chose him. I find that amazing.
Well, that's where your currency is, I
suppose. They needed an asset to get the picks
required. So who's
going to
kick St Kilda's goals?
Oh, I think Membry is a good
player. A lot of pressure
player.
On Tim Membry. He's a good player, but who else?
I think Max, he'll kick 60.
I think Max King.
Who has never played a game, coming for knee reconstruction.
I think Max King will... He's good.
He's a very good player, but my point is...
I think Paddy Ryder will play forward. He can kick goals.
She can call for obstruction by one umpire and step in by another. That's what a moving shooter brings.
Moving shooter, not just that, but the Australian skipper as well, Caitlin Bassett, yesterday in Game 2 of the Constellation Cup for the Diamonds against the Silver Ferns. 48-42, a victory for the visitors. The away goal rule is going to be important there, maybe, in the Constellation Cup. Not that there is one, but if there was, it'd be handy. 48-42 in Lisa Alexander's 100th test as Diamonds coach. A victory for our girls as they bring the next two games back to Australia, with Sydney and Perth hosting the next two. We're going to chat to one of the Diamonds tomorrow, my understanding is.
It should be said, that's a very important win for Australia. I know it's only game two of a four-game series, but considering how they'd played in the last few matches, and St Kilda, where did that come from? New Zealand had a bit of the wood over them in recent times. I think that was a really important win for them.
We'll chat to Maddie Brown about that a little bit later on. She's coming in after 7:30, but very low-scoring affairs, a little sort of like Ross Lyon sort of stuff.
Defensive.
48-42, like must have been a wind in the venue and some rain.
Air conditioning was coming through
the roof. 48-42, very low.
The centre wicket in midfield got a bit sticky, a bit of a glue pot.
Yeah, it must have been a dour affair for the second game of the
Might have been a bit of back to basics from Australia.
Well, Lisa Alexander was talking about just telling the girls that she's proud of them. That's what she said. I heard it before. Let's play it again, Lisa, the coach.
Oh, look, I feel great. I actually threw out the script for my pre-game. And they're all looking at me, because especially Seabass, she's seen everyone. And I did something different because I wanted to demonstrate to the players that they needed to be brave out there, and I had to be brave too. And then I just told them that, look, at the end of the day, if they go out there and give it their all, I'm proud of them no matter what the result is, and that'll be special. So don't put that extra pressure on, you know, doing it for Lisa. You don't do that. You play to your processes, and that's what we did well tonight. They actually played the game plan much more smartly and executed and played with passion as well. So I couldn't have asked for more.
Couldn't have asked for more, the coach of the Diamonds. Don't do it for Lisa. Just can't play. And that's what they did last night. Well done to the Diamonds, 48-42 over the Silver Ferns.
Now goes to Australia for the next two matches.
Sydney and Perth hosting the next two tests for the Constellation Cup. Speaking of coming to Australia, big news yesterday in the world of golf, Adam Romanowskis.
Yes, yes.
Because with 50 days to go to the Australian Open, it was announced that Adam Scott, in your life, is coming back to play in the Australian Open, which must suggest that the field that will assemble for that tournament later in the year would possibly be the best that's been on our shores for quite some time. Have to be close, wouldn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Did our man, the amateur, who went really well in Las Vegas the other week, get...
Trent?
Yes.
I think that will happen.
That will happen.
I think that will happen.
Excellent.
I think it's... Look, we're very lucky that the President's Cup is in Australia this year. And
no doubt,
pretty much been an edict from Ernie Els that for the international team to play in Australia the week before the President's Cup. The Americans have got Tiger Woods' tournament in the Bahamas that week of the Australian Open. So most of the Americans are using that as their sort of tune-up, bit of team bonding and all that sort of business, and they'll all come in on Tiger's jet. You can understand that. But from an Australian perspective, it's as strong an Australian field as you can get. And then when you add in the mix, there's a few European Tour players playing and a few of the Asian players playing that are in the President's Cup team. Yeah, I think it's going to be the strongest for a very, very long time.
So do you reckon they've been sitting on that one as part of the build-up, or has it taken a while to get Adam Scott to commit?
No, I think they've been sitting on that for quite a while.
Right.
But there has been a bit of, I wouldn't say hostility, but there has certainly been a bit of unease between, I don't know whether you call it, well, it probably is Golf Australia and Adam Scott. He's missed the last 3 years, and that being because there was unrest over the amount of money that Jason Day was played a few years ago. Adam Scott was one that he would come back every year and he'd do a deal where he would essentially be the ambassador of Australian golf.
Yep.
And Jason was never coming back. So they did a deal to get Jason back. Adam Scott was a bit upset that he became the poster boy. So there's been a bit of a gap for him coming back. So, yeah, it's 3 years I think he missed the Open. So it's good to have him back, and hopefully it starts him rolling again. Because, I mean, Adam Scott was the one that was coming back every year and playing virtually all the tournaments. And he, you know, that's one of the key reasons why he's so loved by the Australian golfing public.
And well, speaking of the President's Cup, while we're talking golf, for Justin Thomas telling us that Tiger Woods is going to unravel all the nuances of Royal Melbourne for the international team, for the US team. He goes, no dramas. Don't worry about the home course advantage for the internationals. There's only be three or four Australians anyway. That Tiger's going to sort things out. So Tiger must have this little handbook, this little Royal Melbourne handbook where he dominates proceedings. He's going to pass it on to all the teammates.
Well, he's done reasonably well when he's been here, but it's not like he's played it 150 times. And there's still conjecture as to whether he's going to play or not.
Yeah.
You know, he was hoping to be able to directly qualify, but that's not the case, so he's got to use a captain's pick on himself. Now, if you're being smart, that's of course you're going to do that. But he hasn't played a lot of golf over the last 6 months.
Do you think it will be his call?
Of course it will be. We should get Matt Kaminsky on because he is he's around. He's in town. Just to
around,
get a bit
maybe.
Of a feel on what who makes that call. Because I'm sure the tournament organisers want him playing.
Look, I just think I'm going to play. I'm going to pick myself.
Imagine if
your teammates then just sort of say, well, hang on a minute, we think such and such. Team morale sort of plays a part in this.
But the flip side is, imagine if Tiger said, nah, I'm not playing. I just don't feel I'm playing well enough. There'd be a lot of tournament organisers going, oh, no, Tiger.
No, I reckon you're pretty good, mate.
I reckon you've been playing pretty well. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Swinging real smooth to me, Tiger.
I saw something on the range I really like. You got to play.
just the sound of the ball off the club, Tiger. It just sounded nice.
You might not see, but I see it. It's going to come together.
You're a shot away.
You just one practice round the right, I reckon. Just keep practicing, Tiger. You've got the handbook for Royal Melbourne, so you'll be fine. So the great news for the US is that he's got the handbook and Justin Thomas is going to get a piece of it, so they should dominate.
Well, they probably will.
They probably will anyway.
I mean, their team is as strong as it's ever been. But look, Europe find a way to win. Now, they've got a much better team than what the President's Cup, what the international team would be in the President's Cup, but Europe find a way.
Yes.
I think they're a bit more aggressive.
Well,
getting their face a bit, and Americans don't tend to like that too much.
Getting in their face?
Yeah, but just a bit more, you know, they've got the likes of Ian Poulter that, you know, can get a bit aggressive if you can on a golf course. But even just the way they play, really attacking brand of golf. They've got young guys that, like, you know, like a John Rahm that, you know, they just take it up to the Americans and getting their face a little bit. And I think they don't like that too much because that's what they're meant to do.
In the air, center field. This should do it. Robles will squeeze it, and there it is! The Washington Nationals are National League champions! There will be a World Series in D.C.
You betcha there will. A big result yesterday for the Nationals. We beat the Cards 7-4 to wrap up a sweep series in the National League Finals, and they are heading off to the World Series, and it is very, very exciting business for the Washington Nationals, the first time in their history. Of course, they were the Montreal Expos, and then they became the Washington Nationals in 2005. So there's only a brief history in these colours and this naming of the franchise, so to speak, in US sport, but very exciting occasion it is anyways. You're a baseball man. Why do you be all over that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. And there hasn't for a while been too many good teams in Washington either. So I think this is a very exciting time for people that love their sport in the nation's capital.
Well, let's have a chat to one of those people in the nation's capital. Sam Fortier from the Washington Post has been good enough to join us the day after the Nationals are through to the World Series. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're going very well, buddy. More importantly, how's Washington doing?
Washington is doing... It couldn't be doing better. I mean, last night, the Nationals won Game 4 to secure a sweep of the Cardinals and go to the World Series for the first time in franchise history. And I got home at about 5 in the morning, and the city was not ready to go to sleep still. So what a night it was in Washington, D.C.
So my colleague Whitey was saying before that there haven't been many great sporting teams coming out of Washington for quite some time. Is that a part of this, that it's about bloody time that we've had someone that's half decent?
Absolutely. I mean, the two biggest teams in the city are the Redskins of the football of the NFL, and they are incompetent and have not been able to put together a winning season in quite some time. And for the Nationals to put together what they have, and before the season they never made it out of the first round of the playoffs, and for them to get through the second round and go to the World Series, I mean, this has just been a sort of remarkable run they've been on.
So you've got such great pitchers, the Nationals, Scherzer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many good pitchers, but it was your bats this time that got firing. So putting up 7 runs early in yesterday's game was the key to the win.
Absolutely. I mean, this team was built on starting pitching. That's how they won the first 3 games of the series. They hadn't allowed, any earned runs. But, I mean, the bats came out, and they really took it to the Cardinals starter, Dakota Hudson. He has a lot of trouble staying in the strike zone. But when he went there, the Nationals hit him. He lasted 15 pitches, and the Nationals scored ultimately 7 runs off the base runners he allowed. It was sort of a remarkable outburst. Because the Cardinals, before they struggled to score runs, last round they scored 10 runs in the first inning of the game that they won against Atlanta to get here. So it was sort of giving them a taste of their own medicine late in this series.
And you talk about how good the bats were, and you lose Bryce Harper in the offseason, who was one of the highest paid free agents. How significant is this? Because a lot of people thought the Nationals were no chance without Harper in the lineup.
Absolutely. I mean, you lose a player like him. I mean, he was drafted first overall way back in 2010. He was, kind of the seen as the savior to this inept franchise. And he came here and he did a lot of good. And he, was an excellent player. But the Nationals have really replaced him in terms of statistics with Juan Soto, their 20-year-old, left fielder out of the Dominican Republic. He's, an incredible hitter. And he's really replaced him on the field. He's not the same star, but he's given this team what they needed. And last year, the Nationals turned in a pretty disappointing season, missed the playoffs. Some people say, some players say, because the Bryce Harper contract situation was a little distracting. Now, you have a lot of players who are still under contract, and a few stars, Anthony Rendon most notably, could leave in the offseason, but this team really was just able to put that, those sort of distractions behind them that they might have had last year with Bryce Harper, and were able to move on here in the playoffs.
So, Sam, can you quite believe what's happened? Because obviously you lose players in the off season, you start the season extremely poorly. The Nationals haven't been a great team since moving from Montreal. Then all of a sudden now you find yourself seeing in a World Series. I mean, how is this possible?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something people have been trying to puzzle out all season. And at that poor start of the season, they started 19-31, and then over the last 112 games, became the best team in baseball, tied for the best team in baseball record-wise. And really, they attribute their manager, Dave Martinez, for making that happen. Dave Martinez has this, it's a cliche, but he always says, "Let's go 1-0 tomorrow." He's a very "let's focus on today" kind of guy. And while that seemed pretty maddening when the team was struggling so hard, it ended up being less problematic and more prophetic, because the Nationals were able to go 1-0, so many days for the rest of the season and become the third team ever to go from 12 games below 500 at any point in the season to then making the playoffs.
Freo deserved a good deal for Brad Hill. He's a very good player. He's got 2 years to go in his contract. He'll be massive for us under the roof here at Marvel. So we're happy to pay a good deal to get that done because it's the right thing to do to get a good player.
One of the big deals of the trade period done by the Saints and Fremantle, finally getting Brad Hill to Moorabbin to top off their haul of players as part of the trade campaign. Scotty Gullen was watching it all unfold with intimate knowledge and detail. Good morning, Scotland.
That sums up how I was feeling last night.
You see it clearly.
I do.
Did you forecast all this yesterday?
Well, a lot of list managers don't see it as clearly as I and make silly decisions, but St Kilda, you got to give them credit. We are on the march, and I tend to agree. That's what they said.
Oh, right.
No, not me. Oh, no, God.
I thought you were on board.
No, but good on them. They put it on the line, said they wanted to get 5 experienced people in, and they did. And it does elevate them instantly. I'm not saying they're going to play finals. But
does it?
I think it puts them into the mid-bracket quickly with the development of other young kids they've got. I know Josh Bruce, who's gone to the Premiers, is a good result.
I think a lot of people are forgetting that Jack Stephen is no longer playing at their football club.
But he didn't play this year anyway.
Jack Stephen. Yeah, but he's their best player.
Blake Akers is a pretty handy player.
Blake Akers.
Yeah, but I give you Brad Hill. I know his price has been overblown a bit, but he is a solid conveyance underneath the roof. Paddy Ryder will help the kid, who's a gun, as long as he doesn't stuff Marshall up. Dougal Howard, nice, tall.
Dougal will be good.
And Zach Jones has got a bit of speed, and so has Butler. I'm quite happy if I'm a St Kilda supporter.
Well, let's chat to James Gallagher later on. They do lose, as you say, Bruce, Akers and Stephen, and they're not in the draft till pick 76. So they're a fair bit down the order, so to speak, Remmer, the Saints. But they got what they wanted. They went out and targeted what they wanted, and they got it. So
I think that's the point, is that they actually got the players that they wanted to bring in. So that's a win, but it is off the back of losing players.
It's a big shift in their list strategy. They were going after the big fish for a number of years, and they weren't able to land. So they thought, okay, let's spread the money out another way here, and we'll go after 5 players and try to fill the holes that we need that way.
And I think that's sound list management.
Yep.
Well, Hill, their
midfield,
about
that a lot, haven't we?
Yep.
Was a bit of the same without Stephen at his best. So Hill adds something.
Yep.
Jones can play through there.
I think Brad Hill at Marvel Stadium.
Oh, yeah. Lethers couldn't keep, you kept mentioning
kept
the roof.
Mentioning,
13 games. What? The draw hasn't even come out. No, he'll be here for 13 games.
I think Brad Hill on any ground, the way he runs is going to be effective.
5 years.
But Brad Hill has, despite what he did at Hawthorn in regards to the premierships he won, he has clearly elevated his game to another level since going to Freo.
No doubt.
So he's going to be a very good player for St Kilda.
No doubt. And you throw in, we just touched on it briefly before, with King and Henry, who's got a preseason. Well,
McCartan might come back.
McCartan might come back.
We don't know.
Robertson's back. There's another one. Geary didn't play a lot of footy.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it does become
Caulfield
a much
and that
stronger
elevated
Hunter Clark and Caulfield.
They
are the
elevated.
Two.
And then you got Marshall another year in here. So all of a sudden,
the Saints will be
good.
The hype team over summer.
I think they'll be the hardest team to peg of all 18 teams in the competition, St Kilda. I reckon.
Haven't looked that far into it, I must admit.
No, but they just got, because they're going to have a very different team, and there are players like a Paddy McCartan, etc., a Dylan Robertson. We don't know whether they're going to be able to come back and play. The new players coming in, the youngsters that they've got coming through, they are an absolute unknown.
They've given themselves a shot, which I like if I'm a supporter.
Remember?
I think Geelong, Scotty, I think Geelong supporters can be happy. You lose Tim Kelly, which is it's a big loss. But if you get a fit and healthy Jack Stephen in for the next couple of years,
he's got a big couple of months, Jack.
Yeah, he has. And look, there's no doubt he needs to get himself right back in shape.
But I agree. And
I think this is step one.
Step to one, not
to do it. Well, yeah. No, step one, get him to Geelong.
The horizontal stripes aren't going to help his cause.
No, I agree. I mean, you're right.
Like, speaking from experience.
Kelly out hurts. They got a good draft haul, and then they've got Jack Stephens for nothing. Josh Jenkins, interesting. Look, if he's picked 41 on your list or whatever.
Can Hawkins, Radaglia, and Jenkins play in the same team?
I think they can, although it goes in the face of what they did this year. They changed it up and went small, and it worked. They got finished top of the ladder. So you don't want to... Radaglia is the key to all that. He's a star and needs to be... The role he's got at the moment's fine. You don't want him doing more ruck. It works. But I think, Wiley Buzzer is not going to be there. If you've got Josh Jenkins there instead of Wiley Buzzer or someone to come in and play, I think they can find a way for him.
It's a good point, I reckon, that about the strategy of what he does do to the way they look forward with the ball. Because, as you rightly say, Scotty, they changed the dynamic significantly and had a really good result from a home and away perspective.
Yeah, I don't think those three guys can play in the same forward line.
No, together. I tend to agree. I mean, and
Jenkins. Well, could he be reinvented?
That would be interesting. I mean, I like...
Sorry to cut you off.
Yes, he could.
But why is there such... There is this negative vibe about Josh Jenkins. Figures are figures. And, you know...
I know,
we're talking about 261 goals in his last 119 games.
He just got tagged with, he kicked all his goals over the back when Adelaide was flying.
But wasn't that the way Adelaide played more than the way he played? Or, Ramon, what's your view on Josh Jenkins?
He just doesn't take marks. I think that's all people say. He's 6'6" and 200 pounds.
I think there is that discussion about the way that Adelaide played through the
years. And he fitted it
really well. Was perfect for him. And he maximised his opportunities and it obviously helped the team as well. Geelong play a very different brand of football.
Yeah, that's right.
To the Adelaide Crows. It's very slow, methodical.
Particularly this year, they played a different brand of football.
But why can't he be adaptable?
Yeah, I agree. So, it's a challenge.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I was surprised that there was only one suitor in the end, and maybe there were a couple of others behind the scenes. But to me, if you take his contract out of play, of which Adelaide's actually paying some.
Yeah, so that's not an issue now.
I found it interesting that he wasn't a more player in demand.
So he averages two tackles. So to talk about now the other parts of his game, you've spoken about the goals, Whitey, but if you look at the other parts of his game, he averages two tackles a game and five hit-outs a game. So that's...
How many marks?
Five marks a game.
Playing under a different style, of course, but...
5 miles out. And I think it's more around that contested style of mark that they want him to take. Like you said, Whitey kicks a lot of goals over the back.
There's not too many players that can kick 62 goals in a season.
No, it's worth a punt. No,
I agree
doubt.
With that. But those three will not play in the same forward line together.
No, I tend to agree with that.
The Premier's had a good period, Scotty.
The Premier's?
Your Premier's.
Oh, yeah, the Footscray Football Club. Yeah, absolutely.
The Footscray Football Club.
Well, again, like St Kilda, they said, right, we want... a key back and a key forward, and they kept pick 13. So I think they've come out.
They've won it easily. Because they've kicked, not only have they got their first pick this year, but they've still kept their first pick for next year.
Johnny Ralph might need to reconsider the B+.
Yeah, he's overrated.
What's the highest grade he gave? He gave an A+.
Oh, people got A. Geelong got A. I mean, I reckon the Bulldogs went better than Geelong. Josh Bruce helps Shacky and Norton. Gold, absolute gold.
Well, Norton can now play back.
No,
come on,
Andy Harper.
Norton has proven himself to be one. He's an elite forward.
I'm
top five tall forwards in the comp.
I'm saying he has now.
He took 21 contested marks one day, and he's going to kick 10.
Aaron Norton, I don't think we'll be seeing much back time. Ever again.
So now Keith can play key back with Wood and all the other flexible. It's a good effort from
I think the Dogs have been fantastic.
I think did okay, Melbourne.
Explain why.
What happened to the Deuce? Let's just run
will
through
Will they do anything they funky with 3-8?
Because they did a lot of their stuff early and people forget what they've done.
So they've got Langdon and Tomlinson in. Sam Frost went out and they've got 3-8 to play with.
They were desperate for outside runs.
So they swapped 8 for 26 and 52 or something in next year's first year.
Only a C+ from the Buzz.
Yeah. I liked what Melbourne do. And I think so they gave away their future first round pick to get pick 8 from North Melbourne. So there's potential they'll get that back and trade 3 for 6 with GWS, and they'll also get GWS's future first round pick. So they'll get that back potentially. But they were desperate for outside run. Ed Langdon had a terrific year at Fremantle, and Adam Tomlinson's one of the fittest, most versatile players in the competition. So Adam Tomlinson could easily play on a wing, but he could just as easily play at centre half back and free up Jake Lever to play as that interceptor.
So almost replacing Frost.
Very, very different player to
but
Sam
Frost. Tall defenders.
Taller.
What about their forward line? Walk me through
That's probably the area that they didn't address.
But is a team that finished in a preliminary final 12 months ago to have two picks inside 10 in a draft
is excellent.
Is not a bad scenario.
So between now, do they do the deals and then on draft night they announce it? Or can they go,
So you can continue now to trade picks.
At any time, like next Tuesday, just send a fax in.
Yep.
Tomorrow. Oh, yep. This morning they can do a few things.
They can, like, there was a lot of talk last night. There's a common area where all the where the trades are happening, where clubs are talking about trading picks over the next couple of weeks. Now, if they were desperate to do it because they needed it to get a player trade done, they would have did that last night. But I think you'll find there'll be, you know, probably half a dozen pick swaps over the next little period of time.
Because now they look at the draft and go, well, we want that kid because we missed out on that. He fits
a little bit of that.
We need your pick. Yep. Do you mind?
But if you look now, the Bulldogs, so, you know, they've only got pick 13. Now, you have to have three picks in the draft. So they're going to have to potentially lose a couple of players off their list.
Is that it? Just the one? Mm. Oh, perfect. That's fantastic. One pick. And Melbourne's only got 3 and 8 and nothing else.
But so you can upgrade a rookie player, and that counts as a pick in the draft. Okay.
So tell me, Rama, why did the Kangaroos do that deal with Melbourne?
It's a good question.
So in the end, they got Aiden Bonner late, had some knee challenges, but
that's not a bad pick.
I reckon Aiden Bonner can be a good player.
I don't disagree with that.
Mm. Good size.
Good size, but they got him out. They've still got, and they've got 26, 27... 47
and 50,
they got the future first round.
So they got 2 first-round picks next year.
Is next year a bit of a compromise because of father sons? And
there's a lot of academy players next year.
So a first round's not necessarily as good a first round as it possibly would be this year.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised North Melbourne gave up a top 10 pick in this draft.
Okay,
but isn't there top 2 and then a bit of gap for this year?
No, I think there's.
Oh, Tom Green goes to Dido. Yeah, he's a good player.
No, I think there's comfortably 20 really, really good players in this draft.
Yeah.
I think it is. North Melbourne were very, very quiet through the trade period. I get the feeling that Reece Shaw wants to have a year with a pre-season with the group and a year to see what he's got.
But I also think that was personnel-based as well within their list management team. So Brady Rawlings doesn't start at North Melbourne
that's
until
a good
the 1st of December.
Yeah,
but you can't not Michael make moves just because he hasn't had his feet
Michael
under
McMahon
the
has been let go, but he's working. His last day is on Friday, so it was a tricky period for North Melbourne without the leadership of a GM of football.
No, it's a great call.
Or a CEO.
In a lot of ways, their list management through this period was more about making sure that Goldstein and Higgins stayed at the football club. They were big things for them, you know, very early on postseason.
Sometimes if you hold your ground, it's a good result.
Mm.
Like North, I think North have got some really good young players.
Yeah, I agree.
And they were exposed this year, and a lot of people thought, North. But I thought get another top 10 pick in.
Yeah,
I think would have been a really good. Now they might they got 2 picks in the next year's draft in the first round, so they might come back into the first round at some stage over the next few weeks.
Oh, so they could trade futures now as well.
Yep.
Oh, okay, right.
Yes.
But North is still looking for that. I hate using this word. They're still looking for their next franchise player, aren't they, though? That young star.
Marquee
player for the footy club.
You know, they're not easy to find.
No, I know that, but not having picks early makes that a bit harder.
Mm. What happened to the Blues?
Oh, they're stinking. Your club's stunk
what
it
do you
up.
Mean?
They got, look, I think they'll still get Jack Barton
for free.
I mean, they're running a bit of a risk. I don't know why they didn't do that deal for Jack Martin.
Well, I don't think it was their problem. I think it was a Gold Coast problem.
No, but initially they were only offering like second and thirds. The kid's got a bit of talent. If you want him,
he's out of contract.
They could have swapped 15 and 9 and other stuff.
They offered 15 for 9 or 9 for 15, and then a second future, second and third. I think it was.
No, wasn't that the Gold Coast saying that would work?
No, the Gold Coast put the kibosh on it.
It's
disappointing. And I read somewhere today that it might have been even Tony Cochran pulled rank.
The president should not be involved in anything to do with trading.
Well, my understanding is that the boss had a say.
He shouldn't even know that this stuff's going on.
There was a bit of mail around that there were a few administrators that got involved in whether players left or didn't leave football clubs.
Let the cobblers cobble.
I mean, seriously.
It's a sound methodology. But
I mean,
seemingly, he was the barrier for Jack Martin.
Unless it's to do with one of your elite players, let them do their work. They know what's...
The deal seemed okay, though, didn't it?
I thought it was
to
okay.
Me. It did seem pretty good to me.
Future second, future third for Jack Martin. So that's equivalent to pick 13.
So sliding 9
for an academy
9 to 15.
Team, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Sliding 9 to 15 first round too.
Well, that was
that was never really in play because Carlton needed to save that pick for Papley at all. So it never really, that was never really on the table. And well, Carlton were afraid if they did slide that Sydney wouldn't accept pick 15 for Papley in the end. So it was more the future second, future third, which is important to Gold Coast because of the academy points,
the points
for next year. There's a couple of Gold Coast academy players coming through next year. So, like I said, that's equivalent to pick 13. So that's a lot of points.
Good player, Tom Papley, but he's become Lee Matthews in the last 4 weeks.
So,
they'll be very happy then, Sydney, to have him on the books.
The national draft, he enters it. He puts himself at risk, Jack Martin, that others...
Well, he doesn't need to go into the national draft. He can do a pre-season draft. You can then put a price on
And Carlton's still going to have a top five pick.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's got to get through 10 other clubs.
Well, you wouldn't think Gold Coast would pick him up.
No.
Well, at the moment, Eddie Betts and Mark Pitanay in and Phillips out isn't exactly a blockbuster effort from Bound by Blue.
But if they get Martin in...
They got Martin in
for free, and they got pick 9 as well. Still.
What other clubs would be interested in Martin? Would suit Martin?
Well, he'd suit a couple.
Melbourne comes to mind as a
club. Why wouldn't they go? They've got to find money, though. Money's an issue for Melbourne. They've paid overs for a lot of people.
Mm. Right. Well, there you go. Maybe that's
back
why.
Back in a contract for Jack.
Steve Silvani didn't seem too stressed.
No.
Yesterday as he walked out of the meeting.
It was a bit of a feeling of like the Sydney situation. Well, we've got another way to get him, so we don't need to really give up too much to get Jack Martin in because we have got ulterior motives or alternate plans.
Sam Power was in charge of things at the Western Bulldogs for the last, well, it seems like about 6 years, this trade period, but last little while, we'll call it. And he's had a good period as well. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
You a happy man today?
Yeah, it's always a relief when it's all over and we're able to acquire the players that we set out to in Josh and Alex, which is really positive for the club.
Was it a harder fight than perhaps you thought it would be to get Josh and Alex, considering that they were mooted for quite some time? Did you have to work a bit harder?
Yeah, I mean, it probably went a little bit longer than I would have liked, but, I mean, that's to do with a lot of other trades and waiting for other things to happen as well. So we were always confident from our end that we'd put something in front of both those clubs that would be able to get the deal done at the end.
Were you fearful, because you get the bookends, which is a fantastic result. You've got one of the best midfields in the competition, if not the best midfield in the competition. So your strategy makes perfect sense. How important was keeping pick 13 for you?
Yeah, really important. Really important where we see this draft and what may be there around that pick that... Yeah, you know, we were really keen to continue to build on our talent base, but at the same time bring in some mature players that can come straight into the team and have an impact straight away.
We've talked a lot about Josh Bruce over the last 3 or 4 weeks. You've got a good player that can kick, 30, 40 goals minimum every season, because that's what he's done over the last 5 years when he hasn't been injured. It's a big boost to your footy club.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, contested marking's obviously really good and, you know, he's really athletic, both speed and endurance for a big guy. He can pinch hit in the rough, which will be important for us as well. So, and we think he'll not only be a good player in his own right, but he'll really help the development of Norton and Shacky and allow them to play their natural games as well.
Now, I'm a bit nervous asking this question because Rem has already shot me down, but does it also give the flexibility to put Norton back potentially where he started, or is it very much a situation where it is going to be Bruce and Norton as the main two up forward?
Oh, I think what he showed he can do this year as a forward was really exciting and we'd like to keep working with that. But I suppose what it does is do at the same time within game, if we need to for certain reasons, if we need to get someone else behind the ball or Aaron's down, we probably didn't have that luxury this year to throw him back because we needed him forward, him and Josh. So it does give a little bit more flexibility within games. But with what Aaron showed, in his first year, really as a forward, we're really excited about what he can do in the front half of the ground.
So, Sam, forget the two names. How long had you guys targeted those positional needs for your football club? How early or late in the season was that identified?
Oh, pretty early in the year. We've had a couple go out through last year's trade period, a few retirements as well. So Jack Redpath retired, Tom Boyd, retired during this year as well. And then with a few going out, Marcus Adams at the end of last year, it just made us a little bit vulnerable in those areas of the ground. And we saw that at a couple of times, during this year. So to add another, you know, experience, yeah, key back and key forward was the clear priority from early on.
So was it a matter of zeroing in on those two, or did you cast the net a little bit wider for those positional needs?
Yeah, we're really targeted in how we do it. We don't sort of cast it too wide and talk to too many. We sort of hone in on, firstly guys that we think will make us a better team, but ones we think we've got a real chance of attracting to the club as well. So, it was very, very specific, with those guys. So, you know, we're wrapped with the outcome at the end of the day.
Speaking of Australians and injuries... And all Australian type players. Matty Brown's one of those from the Australian netball scene. A diamond through the years, in fact, the very best of diamonds through the years. And she's had the knee challenges through the Collingwood Netball, Super Netball season this year. But she signed a deal to hang around in the black and white, which is great news. We think that's awesome. She joins us on the Breakfast Club. Matty, good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Great to have you with us. Well done to you on the contract extension. Good stuff. How long has this been in train for?
I guess it's been on the cards since, my season never began at the start of the year, going down with my second knee injury in the pre-season. In my head straight away, I was like, yeah, of course I want to get back and play. But, I mean, there's been a lot of things that have been happening, not just on the court, but also off the court this year for me. And I wanted to make sure that I could commit to the club and be fully invested before I signed the deal. And they were really understanding to give me that time to just have a think about it and make sure that obviously this is exactly what was going to be best for me, but also for them. And I'm obviously delighted to be able to hang around for another year.
Yeah, good. Great for the team, I think, and certainly great for you. Did you have any fears that when she did the knee and you're being out of contract that it might have been difficult to get an extension?
I think it always goes through your head as an athlete going, oh, have I done enough? And I know that because I'd obviously retired from the Diamonds at the end of last year, the last game I'd played for Magpies was our last round game and we lost by 32 points and everyone was a shamble and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to lose my last game, and that was horrific. But, I think in the pre-season I'd obviously started to challenge myself in a different position and worked extremely hard because I'd had that time to get my body right. So I was raring to go and it was just obviously a bit of a freak accident that sidelined me. So, yeah, I felt like I'd done enough. And it's not only just about, I think, what you can do on the court, but, how you can then, get around the girls and play a role off the court. So even though I couldn't do a job for the team being out there in games, I hopefully was able to play a part in, creating a bit more of that bonding environment and culture off the court.
No one wants to do a knee, but Maddie, could it actually be a positive what's happened for you and your netball to have a sort of a year away to refresh the mind as much as anything? I know you went travelling and doing other things that you haven't been able to do that can bring you back and actually rejuvenate you at this time in your career?
I actually couldn't agree with you more, to be honest. Absolutely no one wants to get injured, but because I'd obviously retired from the Diamonds at the end of last year, I was like, maybe I'll be around for another one in the black and white stripes. And then having this made me really kind of rethink things and go, well, maybe it won't just be one more year. Maybe it can be two. Maybe, I do have more left in me, and maybe this is just a little bit of the break that I kind of needed, as you said, mentally and physically, to make sure I was spot on and ready to go. So, yeah, it's been really good to kind of get out of the bubble a little bit. I got to go travelling, as you mentioned, but also just kind of refigure about, I'm very structured and I'm very organised, and I'm like, okay, this is what my next 5 years is going to possibly look like, and it kind of threw it all up in the air. So it's been nice to kind of just be a little bit in the moment and enjoy it, and, I think it'll definitely help in the long run, and hopefully it won't just be another year. Maybe it'll be another two. We'll have to wait and see.
It's a big trade and it took a long time, but we're really pleased with the result from a Fremantle perspective, and I'm sure St Kilda are. They get themselves a fantastic wingman, and it's disappointing to lose a player of Brad's calibre. He's a Doig medalist, but it was a big offer that St Kilda lobbed to him and his partner, and Sam wanted to come home as well. And I think our fans will be pleased with what we've been able to receive in return.
There you go. That was Peter Bell. Now, he doesn't work for St Kilda. He works for the Fremantle Dockers. They had Brad Hill on the books, and now he's a St Kilda player, and a bit of feedback from Fremantle's end on that deal. James Gallagher was in charge of the deal from St Kilda's perspective, and he joined us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, James.
Okay, guys, how are you going?
Going very well, thanks. You heard from Peter Bell there about the situation and how it all unfolded from their perspective. We heard Simon Lethlean talk about having to pay a price for a player of the quality of Brad Hill, and that's just what you need to do for these situations. Were you comfortable from the start that this was what was always going to be required to get Brad Hill to your footy club?
Yeah, we were. We were pretty pragmatic, I suppose, about what it takes from a, you know, from a trade value perspective to get a player of the calibre of Brad to your footy club, particularly when they're under contract. So, yeah, I think in the end, just hearing Peter's words then, I hadn't heard those until now, and I think, yeah, both sides would be pretty happy with the outcome. Fremantle have handled it really professionally, and then we're, you know, empathetic to Brad and his partner Sam's desire to come back to Melbourne. But, you know, they needed to get a deal that best suited their footy club as well. So, no, it was a good result all round, I think.
James, in previous years, you guys have gone after the bigger fish and unfortunately missed out. Was it a case of now, okay, we can't do that, let's shift strategies and try bring in a number of guys to fill the holes that we see that we need filled?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I can't speak for previous sort of trade periods or trade campaigns. I've only been at the club for 13 months. This was more, we were really clear on the areas in the ground and the attributes, the type of players that we needed to bring in. We probably didn't set out, you know, 6 months ago with the thinking we need to bring five senior players in. But we were really clear on the type of player that we needed to bring in. And in a lot of ways, you respond to the opportunities as they present. You know, the opportunity to speak to Brad presented later in the year, and clearly for our footy club, that's a real need for us is speed, running ability, and kicking ability.
What was the one that stood out to you that you're most pleased with through this period? Obviously, Bradley Hill is the sort of the headline signing, but was there one that you kind of look back and go, gee, I'm really glad we got that one done?
Possibly, and this is in no disrespect at all to the other players.
No.
But Dougal Howard is a guy that I think is going to be a terrific acquisition for our footy club. You know, he's a big guy, key defender. He's got some leadership, and he's a great character. He's the perfect age for us, and he's coming into his best footy. So that was one that, you know, he's under contract at Port Adelaide. So it was really unlikely. I've watched Dougal for a couple of years and been a huge admirer of his footy and what he brings to the club. And then when the opportunity presented late in the year, that was one that we couldn't miss. So, but we're absolutely rapt to have all five of the guys coming to the club.
I'm interested that you mentioned him, because that was what I was kind of alluding to, is that he was one that I don't think Port Adelaide wanted to give up by any stretch of the imagination, and he was just starting to find his feet this year. Were you quite surprised that he became available?
Yeah, I was surprised, but also, and this is the reality at all footy clubs, is some clubs, or every club has, you know, a number of a certain position, and
yep.
At the end of the day, you have to make a realistic decision on, you know, if you've got five key defenders and he's on a long-term contract and he's ranked fourth in your key defenders, and that, you know, I'm not speaking for Port, I don't know if that's the case, but it makes sense that if you can get some value for them, then you can maybe allow them to look around. So that's, you know, that is our reality in certain positions. It's other clubs' realities for other positions. So, I was probably a bit surprised. But when he was, you know, he was left out of the side for the late year, I thought, in the last month of the year, I thought, well, this is a possibility here.
The Sydney Swans, they were certainly a topic of discussion for a lot of this trade period in the AFL. Tom Harley was the boss of all things at the Sydney Swans. He always is. He's the boss of everything. He joins us on the program. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, gents. How are you going?
Going very well, thank you. Are you happy this morning?
Look, I think that it's a good question. It's an emotional time. I think one of the things that gets missed through trade period is the human side of all of these sorts of things. I think everyone likes to look at it as just commodities and moving things around, but there's high emotion involved. And what I am comfortable with, and you know, that's the most important thing, is that we always put the club first. That's a mandate that we had going into it, and so we sit here comfortable with that. You know, there are some elements of disappointment, sure, but at the same time, very comfortable that we put the club first.
So let's talk about the disappointment then, because that's clearly linked to the Joe Danaher situation. You worked pretty hard to get it to happen, and Joe was certainly pretty keen to try something new and experience a new environment there at the Sydney Swans, and it didn't happen for whatever reason. The contrasting stories we got yesterday, we had Adrian Dodoro tell us that 5 and 9 was never on the table. 5 was actually never part of the conversation. Then Charlie Gardner saying that, well, we didn't offer it because they told us not to. Is that sort of what happened?
So I guess if you go right back to the very start, Essendon and Adrian in particular were really consistent that picks weren't going to get it done, and they needed a replacement for, I think the quotes were pretty much a generational player, a key pillar in their side. And I guess when you're looking at what assets we had 5, we had a future first, we were prepared to bring 9 into the equation. And as recently as midday yesterday, conversation was had between Adrian and Kinnear that 5 and 9 wouldn't get it done. We put forward what we thought was the best offer, which was certainly commensurate with recent deals. There's a few examples of them now since future draft picks have been put into play, and we couldn't get it done. And I guess that highlights the challenge of dealing with contracted players. So there's certainly some disappointment from there, from that point of view. But at the same time, feel comfortable that with what we put forward was the right thing from the club's point of view.
So you'd have been quite happy to pay 5 and 9.
No, well, it's a bit of a moot point. We were happy to pay what we put forward, and when you look at it in the overall scheme of things, and certainly what deals have been done in the past, it's commensurate with that. We were repeatedly told 5 and 9 wouldn't get it done. We were basically told not to trade out Tom Papley if we thought that 5 and 9 would get it done. So no responsible club would go ahead and do that without any assurance of bringing in a player.
Yep.
And I think that's an important piece to it all. And the other important piece is that, you know, we're talking about two very experienced list managers with a long relationship. And in fairness to Adrian, and with total respect to Essendon, they were consistent all the way through this. And it didn't move from the start to the end, unfortunately for us.
So, Tom, is it as simple as now just waiting 12 months and going again, and when the circumstances are going to be different with Joe out of contract? Or is that now off the table, but you might revisit in 12 months? So my point is, are you sort of giving any sort of promises to Joe that you'll try this again in 12 months' time?
No, look, it's all probably a bit raw, isn't it? It was clearly pretty hot yesterday. Joe, that's a decision for Joe. Joe will be a restricted free agent. I think everyone knows that. The restricted part's an important part to it again.
Mm-hmm.
They're the rules. Very important part to it. So, that's going to be a decision that's ultimately going to be driven by Joe and what he's thinking. And I can't speak on behalf with Joe. Clearly, I've got a relationship with Joe, and that relationship is really important to me. I'm sure there'll be some conversations that play out in the next little while, but what have we got, 364 days until so let's not rush to it, hey?
Jonathan Patton is back in Victoria. He's going to be wearing the brown and gold stripes for the Hawks for the next couple of years, and it's good to have him on the program this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, John.
Morning, guys. How are you going?
Going very well, thank you. You're back home, effectively. Back home at the Hawks.
Roeville boy,
work experience in the Hawthorn recruiting department. Must just feel like it's just meant to be.
Yeah, mate. It's pretty funny. I've probably driven past Waverley Park over a million times in my life, and probably had a kick at the footy more times than any of the other Hawks boys in my life. There, I used to go there all the time as a kid. It's funny how sort of come up full circle. I'm playing there now.
So there's obviously been a storied tale of you and your injury history for the last 3 years, or last couple of years with your knees. How long ago did you start to think that maybe a change would be the best thing for your career?
I was probably probably during the year when, you know, I was thinking about coming back and playing, and then, you know, I was thinking about my long-term future, whether that was going to be at the Giants or elsewhere. And, you know, after so many years and so many sessions in rehab, you know, it just kind of got a bit, you know, repetitive, and, you know, it just got a bit, not plain, but it just got a lot of just the same, you know, it was train, injury, repeat, you know, train, injury, repeat.
Yeah.
It was something to me, I just felt like just getting to a new environment. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people that have, you know, changed clubs, you know, in their careers, and, you know, what it can do for them, and especially going to a club like Hawthorn, you know, it made a lot of sense to me.
How difficult was it, was that conversation with the Giants? They're a terrific club, obviously coming off a grand final, and you got a lot of really, really close friends there. You've virtually been there from the start. How difficult was that conversation?
Yeah, it was very, very difficult. Especially, you know, at the best of friends a few weeks ago, I had a bit of a farewell speech and got a bit emotional off on stage, just because you've got so many memories there, and it's not necessarily that I want to leave the place. It's more just something that I think is best for my future and my football career going forward. But it was definitely difficult, you know, in the past, whenever I've been out of contract or, you know, had interest elsewhere, I've always just sort of not really entertained it. So I haven't really gone through anything like this. But now it's obviously done, and I had my first day at Waverley Park yesterday, just getting to know a few people. It was really good, and I can already feel like just a lot of new energy, and just a whole new scene that's going to be fantastic, I think.
So why Hawthorn? Obviously Hawthorn needed to want you, but why did you think Hawthorn was going to be a good fit for your football?
Firstly, just I think the role that they want me to play is, you know, I know I can do it at a high level, and, you know, looking at their team, they've obviously lost a few champions of the game in the last couple of years, but the way they've developed a lot of their young players. And, you know, every year they end up recruiting other players from other clubs. So I felt like the next couple of years, Hawthorn can really push for a top four spot. You know, I think they can really push for to go deep into the finals. So, and obviously on the other side, it was close to home. I know a few faces there, I know a few of the boys. And obviously their medical department's A+, so... there was a whole wide range of things that sort of made me want to go there, and yeah, I was just super, super excited about it.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.